flickering overhead lights. Ivy dripped down from the ceiling, nodding around the cables. Her heart pounded in her chest, hard enough that it felt like a fist. Hard enough that her insides felt bruised from it. The gym had never seemed ominous to her before, with its slick, shining floor and the skeletal metal scaffolding of bleachers, but now she was acutely aware of all the places a monster might rest, folded up, looking like nothing more than a pile of mats, long fingers creeping out to grab hold of an ankle.
"Do you see anything?"
Robbie asked from behind her. Hazel's muscles tensed. She shook her head, glad not to have otherwise shown how much it startled her.
"You don't have to help us look for stragglers," Carter said. "Take Molly and head for the front. Your brother is worried about you. My brother is worried about you."
In the flickering light, the boys seemed different. Robbie looked sallow and a little frantic, the hollowness under his eyes made prominent. Carter looked more like Jack than ever, his face sharpened by shadows. If she tried, she might have been able to pretend he was his brother. For a horrible moment, she understood why someone might do what Amanda did. It would be like kissing Severin's casket. It wouldn't be real. It couldn't hurt.
"Why don't you get out?"
she asked him, not particularly nicely, since she didn't appreciate being condescended to, and she didn't like where her thoughts were going.
"Guilt, mostly. I was the last one to see Amanda. Everyone's saying it, and it's true."
"What happened?" Hazel asked. They were moving through the literature and history hall toward the principal's office in the main doors, passing by the auditorium where the curtained stage lurked. One of the wheels on Molly's chair hung up a little, making a small squeal of protest over and over as it rolled. Robbie pushed, flinching over and over at the noise. There were echoes in some of the rooms, sounds that Hazel couldn't place. In her mind, they became the crawl of the ivy, the slide of a monster's foot, its nails dragging against a wall. She'd hunted through the woods and knew how magnified noise could become. Through hyper-alertness and adrenaline, she knew how convinced you could be that you heard something when it was only your own breathing. And yet, she knew how dangerous it was to dismiss your instincts. But at least in the woods, she had experience identifying the rustlings and breezes and footfalls. At school, she was lost. Every movement made her teeth grit and the hair along her arms stand. Carter spoke again, softly, his voice pitched so Robbie might not hear.
"We had a fight, me and Amanda. She said some stuff about Jack that was ridiculous, like that he wasn't even a person. Maybe she was just trying to rile me up, but, well, it worked. I kicked her out of the car, even though she was wearing these huge, dumb heels, and figured she could just walk. I got about 3 blocks before I realized I was being an asshole. Mom would kill me if she found out that I took a girl on a date and then left her someplace, all by herself, with no way home."
"And?" Hazel asked.
"Amanda wasn't there when I went back. I didn't see her again, and her parents won't let me visit her in the hospital."
He raised his voice slightly.
"Hey, Robbie, what about you? How come you're sticking around, trying to be a hero? Why don't you get out of here?"
Robbie gave them a lopsided grin.
"The one thing I know from movies is never to split up. Besides, you two would be lost without me."
"True enough," Carter said amiably, even though that didn't seem even a little bit true.
"Hey, Hazel, how come you—"
Robbie began. But he never got to finish. A scream split the air. They took off running toward it, the thud of their footfalls pounding against the floor, the shrill squeak of Molly's chair loud in their ears. The screaming was coming from the girls' bathroom. Hazel charged ahead, slamming her shoulder against the door, scissor daggers poised to strike. Leonie stood near the sinks, water streaming from one of the faucets to puddle on the floor. At the sight of Hazel, she screamed even louder. The room seemed empty, but Hazel's heart was beating so fast, and Leonie seemed so scared that she wasn't sure. She kicked open the first stall, but there was only the toilet, with 3 burnt cigarette stubs floating in it. She kicked open the second. Empty. She was about to kick open the third when Leonie grabbed her arm.
"What are you doing? Stop!"
Leonie said.
"You're freaking me out!"
"I'm freaking you out!"
Hazel shouted.
You were the one screaming. The thing, I saw it, Leonie said. Jesus, I thought it was safe to go out into the hallway, but then it was there. Oh, God, what happened to Molly?
Did you get a good look at it? Carter asked from the doorway. He and Robbie were standing at the threshold, as though, even now, the idea of putting one foot into the girls' bathroom with its Pepto-Bismol tile and ancient tampon machine on one wall was forbidden. Leonie shook her head.
I saw something. It was horrible.
We're almost to the exit,
Robbie reminded them, shuddering visibly.
Let's just get out.
What if it's waiting?
Leonie demanded.
It's somewhere nearby.
That's why we've got to go,
Robbie said louder, as if he'd forgotten why they'd been whispering earlier, as if he'd forgotten that they'd stayed inside to get more people out, to be honest. For a single moment, Hazel contemplated walking away from all of them, walking deeper into the school, and waiting for the monster there, daggers drawn. She'd imagined fighting it so many times when she was a kid. It was the embodiment of the forest, the embodiment of terror. In her mind, fighting the monster was like the boss battle in a video game. In her mind, if she'd faced it and won, all the other terrors would stop. Her instincts pushed her toward a fight. Her fingers gripped the scissors more tightly, her blood pumping. She wanted to find the monster and slay it.
Okay, everyone, shut up, Carter yelled. Hazel, what do you think? Should we get out of here or keep looking for more survivors?
What are you asking her for?
Robbie demanded.
Because I know what I think, and I know what you think, and it doesn't matter what Molly thinks, and because...
Carter bit off the words and spun. There was a strange sound, as though someone was dragging a dead body through the halls. Abruptly, one of the rods glowing overhead burst into a shower of sparks, and moss began to boil from the sinks. Spots of mold dotted the mirror. Carter pushed Molly's chair farther into the room, her head lolling to one side, hair over face. Robbie slammed the door closed behind them. Carter slid his hockey stick through the handle and braced to hold the door shut since there was no lock. No one spoke. Hazel sucked in her breath and held it. The patterned glass showed a shadow of something move on the other side of the door. It was huge, easily over 7 feet in height, and looked roughly human in shape, if a human could be made from branch and vine and soil. It had a hunched back, and the top of its head seemed to twist into a gnarled stump. Impossibly long twig fingers hovered in the air. It paused a moment, as though it could hear the hammering of their hearts, as though it was listening to their caught breaths. Then it moved past, thudding down the hall. Hazel counted in her head. 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000, 4-1,000, 5-1,000.
I vote we go, she whispered. I vote we go now.
Carter opened the door of the bathroom, and they raced for the front of the school, Molly's chair wheeling faster and faster as Robbie pushed it, Leonie's sneakers squeaking as they pounded against the hallway floor. Hazel brought up the rear, glancing over her shoulder again and again as she ran. She kept expecting the creature to grab them from the shadows, horrible hands lifting them, dirt choking them. She was swept along by panic and the thwarted urge to fight. It wasn't until they were through the front doors and gulping down lungfuls of cold autumn air that she realized they'd made it out of the school. From the trees all around, cawing crows went to wing in a rush of black feathers, like black flies rising off a corpse. The parking lot was lit with the flashing lights of cop cars and an ambulance, a few other cars too, knots of students beside them. But it seemed as though the majority had already gone home. Those remaining had their faces tinted with stroking blue and red, turning them ghostly.
Is anyone else in there?
One of the emergency service people asked as they descended the steps.
A monster!
Leonie told him. In the clear afternoon light, Hazel could see the way her eye makeup had run, as though she'd been crying.
There was a gas leak,
he said, looking confused and a little alarmed.
You might have breathed in some.
Not bothering to answer, Leonie rolled her eyes and walked past him. Carter heaved up Molly's chair, carrying it,
At the same time, Ben ran up the steps and hugged Hazel. Her arms went around him, hands still gripping her scissor blades, as she pressed them against his back.
"Are you crazy?"
he whispered into her hair. Her eyes went past him to Jack, seated on the hood of Ben's car, watching them with his silvery eyes. "Three times I will warn you, and that's all I am permitted," he'd said. Had he known about this but been forbidden to say? "You know I'm crazy," she whispered back. After Hazel had been checked over by a very solicitous volunteer with the ambulance team, she was told she could go home, but to go to the hospital immediately if she experienced any lightheadedness. Ben was waiting for her by his car, talking with Leonie in low voices. But as she started toward him, Jack caught her arm. When she turned, startled, his gaze made her feel suddenly self-conscious.
"I think the playground meeting is off," he said.
"You better not be about to tell me you're not taking me tonight."
"Not after what just happened," she said.
She tried to keep her voice steady, but it didn't quite work.
Jack shook his head.
The bruise on his cheek looked worse, the swelling more pronounced, turning the skin around his eye the color of a Concord grape.
"Come by my house around sundown. But don't come inside, okay? I'll sneak out and meet you in the backyard. We can walk from there."
"Okay," Hazel said, surprised she hadn't had to argue even more. Surprised and relieved and, despite herself, a little afraid. "So, what do I wear?" His eyes lit with wickedness. For the first time that day, something had amused him.
"Anything you like, or nothing at all."
On the way home, Hazel described to Ben the monster she'd seen through the distorted glass and the way the vines and moss had crept over the school. In turn, he explained how Jack had hustled him outside after the first students collapsed. Jack had been about to go back in for Hazel and Carter when several of the teachers had stopped him, forbidding his going inside, in a way that made it plain they blamed him for everything that was happening.
"This has got to blow over," Ben said, sighing. "They have to see he's got nothing to do with any of this. We all know him."
Hazel nodded, but she remembered the way people had shrunk back earlier that day, remembering the fresh bruise on his face and the story Leonie had told, the one she'd been keeping to herself for years. How many other people had a story like hers? How many people had seen his mask slip and never quite forgotten?
"And we still have to talk. You and me," Ben reminded her as he parked his car in front of their house. "About Severin and what happened the night he got free."
Hazel nodded, even as she hoped she could avoid doing that until after the revel. Inside, their mother was sitting at the kitchen table, smoking a cigarette. Hazel hadn't seen her smoke in years. When they came through the door, Mom ground the lid end into her plate and stood.
"What is wrong with you? Neither of you picked up your phones. I've been freaking out, calling people, trying to figure out what was going on. The school called, but none of their explanations made sense, and now there's a curfew. I think we should talk about going to stay with your father for a while in the city."
"A curfew?"
Ben echoed.
"It was announced over the emergency broadcasting thingy on the television," she said, waving toward it. "Everyone's supposed to stay inside unless absolutely necessary, and no one is supposed to go out after 6 tonight under any circumstances."
"What are they saying the reason is?" Hazel asked.
"Inclement weather," said her mother, raising her eyebrows. "What really happened today?"
"Inclement weather," Hazel said, and took the stairs 2 at a time. Once in her room, she crossed over to her closet and opened the door. Lots of vintage dresses, worn pairs of jeans, and sweaters with holes in them, some hanging, some in a pile on the floor, covering another pile of shoes. Nothing seemed quite right for a fairy revel. Nothing that would make them believe she was someone to be reckoned with. After all, the news promised a storm.
Chapter 13. Jack had said to come at sunset, but it was almost full dark by the time Hazel got to the foot of his driveway. She had snuck out of her house as soon as she was dressed, walking straight through the front door while her brother and mother were in the living room, quiet and steady, so they wouldn't notice. She left her cell phone on her bed along with a note so Ben would know he couldn't get hold of her and hopefully wouldn't worry too much. She'd be back by dawn, and then she would tell him everything. Jack was in the backyard tossing a ball to the Gordon family dog, a golden retriever named Snickerdoodle. The porch light illuminated a narrow pool of grass where they ran. In that moment, Jack looked every bit like a normal human boy, unless you noticed the points of his ears. Unless you believed the stories, then he looked eerily like something playing at being human. When Hazel got close, Snickerdoodle began to bark.
"Time to go inside," Jack told the dog, with a glance at the woods.
Hazel wondered if he could see her in the dark. She waited, wishing she'd brought a jacket. The autumn air grew colder as the orange glow on the horizon tipped down into night. She occupied herself by gathering up horse chestnuts from where they'd fallen and picking off their spiky coverings. It hurt a little where the husk got under her nail, but it was immensely satisfying to feel something come apart in her hands. It seemed as if she were standing there at the edge of the woods for ages, but it was probably only about 15 minutes before a window on the second floor opened and Jack climbed out onto the roof. Inside, she could see the television in the living room, a splash of moving color. Could see Mrs. and Mr. Gordon sitting on opposite couches. He had his laptop open, and the pale glow of it made the shadows outside seem deeper. Jack stepped off the roof and onto the bough of a tree, sidling along it, before jumping to the ground. She braced herself for the noise, for his parents' heads turning, for Snickerdoodle to start barking again, but Jack landed nimbly and quietly. There was only the sound of the leaves rustling when he leaped from the branch, and that sounded only like wind. Hazel met him at the edge of the woods, shivering slightly and trying to be brave. "Hey," she said, letting the chestnut she'd been holding fall. "So, what now?"
"You look nice," he said, his eyes silver in the dark.
She smiled, feeling a little awkward. She'd put on the only thing that seemed to look right, a pair of jeans and a green velvet top she'd discovered in the very back of her closet. In her ears, she'd hung silver hoops, and on her feet were her favorite boots. She hoped it would be fancy enough for fairyland.
"This way," he whispered,
and began to walk. She followed. In the moonlight, the woods were full of shadows and secret pathways that seemed to open before them, and it quickly became clear that Jack saw much better than she did in the dark. She tried to keep up, tried to keep from stumbling. She didn't want to give him any excuses to decide she should be left behind. After they got a ways from his house, Jack turned.
"I should warn you about some stuff."
"Always be polite," she said, reciting what she'd been told a dozen times by concerned adults who didn't want any of the local kids acting like tourists. "Always do what they ask you, unless it contradicts one of the other rules. Never thank them, never eat their food, never sing if you suck at singing, never dance, and never brag, ever, at all, under any circumstances. That kind of stuff?"
"That's not what I was going to say."
Jack took her hand suddenly, his skin warm. There was a rough intensity in his voice that shivered over her skin.
"I'm ashamed of going. That's why I've been hiding it. I know how reckless it is, how stupid it is. I don't mean to. And then I hear it, like a buzzing in the back of my head, when there's going to be a revel. It's like someone whistling a song far off, and I can barely hear the music, but I'm leaning forward, straining to hear it better. So I go, all the while telling myself that I won't go the next time, but when the next time comes, I do the very same thing all over again."
He dropped her hand. The words seemed to have cost him something. Hazel felt awful. She'd been so busy worrying about her own puzzles that she hadn't thought about what she was asking of him. The last thing she wanted was to hurt Jack.
"You don't have to come with me. I didn't know. Just tell me the way and I'll go on my own."
He shook his head.
"You wouldn't be able to keep me from the revel. No one could. That's the problem. But I wish that you'd go home, Hazel."
"And you know I won't," she said. He nodded.
"So here's the rest, then. I don't know how to protect you from them.
and I don't know what they might try to do to you. What I do know is that they hate to be reminded of my human life.
And you think I'll be a reminder? She asked.
To them and to me.
He started walking again.
Be careful. Ben would never forgive me if anything happened to you.
The words stung. Yeah, well, Ben's not my keeper.
Then I'd never forgive myself.
Will you? She hesitated, and then forced herself to ask. Will you look different there? That startled the laugh out of him.
I won't, but everything else might.
Hazel pondered what that meant as they made their way through the woods. She could tell he was trying to slow down so she could keep pace, but she could also sense his eagerness, his hunger to be at the revel.
Tell me a story, he said, pausing to look up at the fat, full coin of a moon as she clambered over some rocks, then back at her. Tell me what you know of the horned boy and Amanda.
After what happened at school, I'm not sure I know much, Hazel admitted. He said the monster was hunting him, and you said the Alder King was after him. Do you think the Alder King is controlling the monster?
Mayhap,
Jack smiled as he said the word, exaggerating its oddness.
But you know better. You're the one he spoke with.
He was looking for a sword, Hazel told him. He said that was the only way he could defeat the monster. This was deeper in the woods than she'd ventured since she was a child, and back then she'd done it with the knowledge she was crossing into dangerous lands. The trees here were old, their trunks massive, and the tangle of their branches overhead was thick enough to blot out the stars. The first rash of fallen leaves crackled beneath Hazel's feet, like a carpet of brittle paper. Jack looked over at her.
There was something else you said. About them using you?
You remember that, huh? She asked.
Hard to forget, he said.
I've been losing time. I'm not sure how much. She'd never said anything like that out loud before. He studied her for a long moment.
That's not good.
She snorted and kept walking. He didn't say anything more. She was glad for his silence. She'd been afraid he'd push her for answers.
In his place, she might have.
But apparently he was going to let her decide what she wanted to tell him and when. They came to the swell of a hill, ringed in thorn bushes that grew in a gnarled circle, creating a thick tangle chasing steps that rose to the top of the hill, where the foundation of an old building rested among tall grass. The steps were cracked and worn, with moss oozing from the gaps and flowing up to an archway. There was a sound in the air, faint music and laughter, flickering in and out, as though blown in by the wind. Suddenly, Hazel knew where they were, although she'd only ever heard of the place before. This was the meeting house one of the town founders had tried to build before he discovered this was a hill sacred to the folk. According to the story, whatever was built during the day was dismantled at night. Whatever land was cleared became overgrown before dawn. Shovels snapped, and accidents left men with cracked bones and bruised bodies until finally the town center of Fairfold was moved miles to the south, where the first meeting house was constructed without incident. Fairy hills are hollow inside, she'd once heard Mrs. Schroeder say. Hollow like fairy promises. All air and misdirection. Hazel shuddered at the memory. Jack walked toward the looping vines of thorn. Scarlet roses grew there with a velvety nap on their petals, heavy and thick as fur. Stems slithered, curling up to make a path slowly so that if you didn't watch closely, if you looked away and looked back again, it might seem as if there had always been a way through. He tossed her a grin, raising his eyebrows. Did you make that happen? Hazel asked in a whisper, without really knowing why she was whispering. Will the path stay open for me?
I'm not sure. Just stay close, he said,
as a sharp tangle spiraled behind him. And so they climbed, with her hand on his back, keeping close enough that the briars let her pass up the steep incline. Jack skipped up the steps and then, at the arch, tapped his foot three times against the ledge and spoke.
Lords and ladies who walk unseen. Lords and ladies all in green. Three times I stamp upon the earth. Let me in, Green Hill, that gave me birth. A chill went through Hazel at the words. It was a scrap of a poem, almost like the sort of thing they would have made up while playing in the woods as kids, but it sounded far older and of uncertain origin. Just like that? She asked. Just like that. He grinned wide and wild, almost as if he was daring her. Your turn. Then, stepping through the arch, he let himself fall backward. Hazel didn't even have time to cry out. She ran forward to see if he was okay, but he was gone. Disappeared. She saw the rest of the hill. The rest of the foundation of the old building. Saw the silvery carpet of long grass. Not sure what else to do, she leaped through the arch, hoping it would take her too. Hazel landed in the grass, losing her footing and falling to her knees painfully, brambles tearing at her jeans and the velvet top. She hadn't fallen through into another world. She was exactly where she'd been before, and she was alone. A breeze made the thorns shiver, bringing with it tinkling laughter. Jack! She shouted. Jack! Her voice was swallowed up in the night. Just like that, he'd said. But the thorns hadn't parted for her, and the poem was unlikely to work. The words weren't right. The Green Hill wasn't where she'd been born. She wasn't one of the folk. She didn't have any magic. Was this some kind of test? Pushing to her feet, Hazel climbed the stairs again. She wasn't very good at rhymes, but maybe if she altered the poem a little, maybe then the hill would open for her? It was a terrifying sort of magic. Stomping three times on the ledge, she took a deep breath and spoke. Lords and ladies who walk unseen, lords and ladies all in green, three times I stamp upon the earth. Hazel hesitated, and then gave the only reason she could think of why the folk might grant her entry to their revel. Let me in for the sake of mirth. Squinching her eyes closed, she stepped through the archway. She fell, just as before, but this time she fell into the grass, the earth beneath her opening up. She struggled, the rich mineral smell of dirt all around her, her nails scraping at the tiny rocks, at the weeds, digging in, trying for purchase. She took one last breath, one last shuddering gasp, and then there was only darkness closing over her. A scream came unbidden to her lips. Her stomach lurched. She spiraled in the air once, the world below her, a blurry streak of mad sights and sounds. Then she was caught, suspended in a net of roots, pale and long and hairy. Below her was the revel, lit by tiny moving lights and leaping fires. There were dancing circles and banquet tables. There were fairies covered in furs and armor in great swirling gowns. A few looked up, pointed, and laughed, but most didn't notice her hanging above them like a living chandelier. And then she saw, resting on huge tiles of gray stone, a throne that seemed to be shaped from the rock itself. It was covered in pelts, and a man in armor was seated upon it. A page whispered in his ear, and he turned to look Hazel's way. He didn't so much as smile. She'd come to the Alder King's court on a full moon night. She couldn't possibly have done anything more foolhardy if she tried. Hazel pushed with her feet, trying to get her bearing on the roots and maybe to begin to climb. But as she did, the roots let go. Hazel fell again, this time hitting the ground hard. After a moment of nerving herself to do more than blink up at the domed ceiling, she pushed herself to her knees. A hand on her arm steadied her. Thanks, Hazel said automatically, opening her eyes. Then she realized her mistake. Never thank them. A monstrous creature stood in front of her, its black eyes wide, a look of disgust on its face. Pale fur grew from the top of its ridged nose, and the tips of its cheekbones, to a crest above its head, fur that dusted over its shoulders and midriff. It was clad in an asymmetrical leather piece stretching across its waist. It let her go as though it had been touching something foul,
and strode off, leaving her stunned and blinking after it. "Sorry," she called, not sure if that made what she'd done better or worse. The revel was like nothing she had imagined, not even her dreams of where the horned boy had come from. It wasn't the way stories told in town had made it seem. Music rang through the air with an aching sweetness. She was left breathless and reeling. Creatures spun on the earthen floor, some with long-limbed, liquid grace, others tromping or gambolling. Small fairies flitted through the air on tattered moth wings, baring their teeth at Hazel. Short folk in heath-brown clothes, with hair that stuck up from their heads like the pistils of flowers, played at dice games and drank deeply from ornately blown glass goblets and wooden cups alike. Tall beings, shining in the gloom as though they were lit up from the inside, whirled in their dresses of leaves, in cleverly shaped corsets of bark, in exquisite silvery mail. Other creatures, far less human-looking, walked among them on stilt-like legs or loomed over them with faces as gnarled as the knots of trees. They were terrifying and beautiful and horrible all at once, all of them. In their midst, seemingly oblivious to the danger, were people she recognized. People from Fairfold, Miss Donaldson, who taught kindergarten, dancing barefoot with an owl-faced creature. Smiling Nick, a long-haired guy who did odd jobs like sharpening knives door-to-door, stumbled among the throng, dressed in black silk scarves streaming behind him. Beside him was a young guy whose name Hazel didn't know, but whom she'd seen before. He worked at the general store in town, mostly stocking shelves. She had once seen him juggling apples in the produce aisle. Not many humans, but here and there she spotted human clothes, even if she couldn't see faces in the crowd. Were they really human, though? Or were they fairies who went among humans and wore their shapes? And if they were human, did they know they were here? Or would they wake with muddy feet, as Hazel had, and no memory of the night before? It wasn't just humans, she recognized. She knew one of the creatures, too. Sitting in a corner, overgrown with hair and munching on golden beetles, was an ogre called Rawhead. She'd heard of him, heard of his taste for human flesh, and even figured out where his lair might be back when she was a little girl with a big, sharp sword. Rawhead grinned in her direction with his red smile as if maybe he recognized her, too. "Move," she told herself. "Don't just stand there gaping. Move." Hazel started walking in a random direction, just putting one foot in front of the other, propelling herself along without any sense of quite where she was going. She didn't see Jack yet, but he had to be somewhere close by. And as frightening as it was to move through the revel without him, as shaky and scared as she felt, she had to find out what she could about the horned boy and the monster and the mysterious messages from the mysterious Ainsel. Otherwise, all the terror and danger were for nothing. Trying to stay far from the dancing, she made her way through the hollow hill. Gillyflower, roses, and sage scented the air, making her dizzy as she went. "Will you take a drink?" asked a small, long-nosed creature, with a stubby tail and eyes that were black as a crow's. It held up a small tray of tiny carved wood cups, with some liquid inside, barely a thimbleful in each. "I swear by the corn of the moon that you'll never taste a sweeter drop." She stopped herself from thanking another one of them, shaking her head instead. "I'm okay." It shrugged and kept moving, but the encounter had given her the jitters. Hazel knew all the rules, but obeying them was turning out to be hard. It was so easy to do the wrong thing automatically, way easier than she could have ever guessed. A laughing woman with thick plaits of russet hair paused as she went past with a goat-headed companion. "Didn't you sketch me once?" the woman asked Hazel, surprising her. For a moment, Hazel didn't know what she could possibly mean. Then suddenly the old story came back to her, the one that had always been about Ben. "You're thinking of my mother," the woman frowned, looking puzzled. "Can it really have been so long? Why, you must be my musician then, grown.
Will you give me a song in recompense for my blessing?
Hazel shook her head. That was my brother. I wasn't born yet, and I'm awful at music. You wouldn't want me to sing. She wondered if she should tell the fairy woman how little joy Ben had gotten from her gift. But Hazel suspected that would violate those rules about politeness.
But, I'll tell Ben I saw you.
Do, she said. Tell him to come and play for Malia, and I'll make rupees fall from his tongue.
That sounded more like a threat than a promise, but Hazel nodded and, not sure what else to do, made a little bow before backing away. Then she walked fast, elbowing through the merry crowd, past pipers and fiddlers, past stick-thin fairies with powdery wings, past willowy green women with black mouths and tongues wearing dresses fine as mist, past long-fingered girls with crowns of twigs woven into the nimbus of their loose hair, past sneering boys with the feet of lions, past crow girls, laughing all together, past large misshapen creatures with moss growing on their massive limbs and mouths full of teeth that appeared to be more cracked rock than bone. Someone grabbed her arm. She wheeled around with a cry, pulling against his grip before she realized who was holding her.
Hazel! Jack looked out of breath and a little panicked. I didn't know where you were.
You left me.
Her voice came out more sharply than she'd intended.
You were right behind me, he insisted. I thought you'd just follow me through the way you'd followed me up the path.
Well, I couldn't, Hazel said.
Someone was with Jack, a tall and spindly fairy woman with skin the silvery brown of bark. Her eyes changed color, lustrous gold, igniting with green.
She couldn't be anyone but Jack's elf mother. Her eyes were just as they'd been in the stories.
Red hair, she said, turning Hazel's head from side to side, observing her.
Plucking up a lock, the elf woman gave her hair a sharp tug.
They used to say that meant you were a witch. Are you a witch, child?
No, ma'am,
Hazel told her, remembering at least the value of politeness.
And what brings you here? Or should I ask, who?
Ainsel,
Hazel said, hoping the name would mean something.
Well, aren't you a wit?
The elf woman said, scowling.
So you know who that is?
Hazel exclaimed, barely able to breathe for eagerness.
Please tell me.
How can it be that you don't recall?
Her frown seemed to signal Hazel to silence. Then she turned, pointing a long finger at Jack.
And I think that this is the boy who brought you. This boy, and this boy alone. He was very wrong to do so, whatever you're looking for. This is no place for you.
Hazel wasn't sure how to answer that without referring to Fairfold. When Jack had warned her against it, not sure how to direct the conversation back to Ainsel.
Jack? Sure, he brought me, but...
The fairy woman circled them both, and Jack moved close to Hazel, as though ready to impose his body in front of hers if the woman grabbed for Hazel again. His mother's voice rose.
Jack? Is that what she calls you? Jack of what? Jack of hearts? Jack of diamonds? Jack of weeping? Jack of woe?
I don't bother with all that fancy stuff. I just go by Jack these days, he said.
And Hazel laughed, a short, awkward bark that she instantly regretted. It had just been such a surprise, his casual, quotidian response to her anger.
Why should I care if he wishes to idle time away in Fairfold? If he wants to play at being a human child, what is it to me? He can eat mortal food, and sleep in a mortal bed, and kiss a mortal girl. But he will never be human. He will always be playing.
She was directing her speech to Hazel, but the words were clearly for Jack's benefit. Hazel wondered how many times they'd had this conversation. He grinned.
You've got to grow where you're planted.
It was a human saying if Hazel had ever heard one, but it had an odd resonance right then. His elf mother's attention didn't waver. Her eyes stayed on Hazel.
So... Have you come to pull him down off his white horse like in a ballad? Have you come to save him from us? The woman asked, long fingers gesturing out at the vast knotwork of roots across the domed ceiling. Or is he here to save you?
Stop, Jack said, putting an arm in front of Hazel. Enough, okay? Stop talking to her that way. It's enough, and more than enough.
Just remember, blood summons blood, she said.
One of the tall knights in shining silver armor, one with shoulder plates crafted to look like screaming faces picked out in shaped gold, approached them with a shallow bow and turned his gaze toward Hazel.
The Alder King would greet her.
Jack's elf mother nodded and cut a look at Jack.
He honors you, she said,
but her tone belied the words. Hazel had heard stories of the Alder King, of course. Each solstice, townsfolk left special offerings out for him. When the weather was bad, they said he must be angry. When the seasons didn't turn fast enough, they said he must still be asleep. She'd never quite imagined him as real. His power seemed great, and he seemed too distant for her to imagine him as anything but a legend. Lead on, Hazel told the knight. Jack made to come with her, but his mother grabbed his arm, twig fingers digging into his skin. Although she tried to hide it, there was genuine terror in her voice when she spoke.
Not you. You remain with me.
He turned to her, head held high, and even in his human clothes managed to convey some of the haughtiness of his lineage.
Marken here isn't exactly known for his fair dealings with humans.
His gaze went to the knight.
Are you? No one requested your presence, changeling.
The knight smirked.
Besides, Hazel doesn't mind coming with me. We've crossed swords before.
Hazel wasn't sure what he meant. Maybe he'd had something to do with one of the creatures she'd fought when she was a child? Whatever it was, Jack looked ready to object. His hand slid into the back pocket of his jeans as if he was reaching for a weapon.
It's okay, Hazel said. Jack, it's fine.
Jack's elf mother leaned her long body toward him to press a kiss to Jack's forehead. Hazel had never thought of her as longing for her lost son, never wondered if there was another side to the story of how Jack came to live with the Gordons. But she couldn't help wondering then.
Mortals will disappoint you, she told him,
almost a whisper against his skin. Jaw set, fury in his eyes, Jack stepped back and allowed Marken to lead Hazel across the earthen floor of the Underhill. The Alder King was seated on the great stone throne she'd glimpsed when she'd hung above the revel. Horns like those of a stag rose from a circlet at his brow, and he wore a shining coat of mail shaped from small bronze scales, each one tapering to a point, all of them overlapping like how she might have imagined the scales of a dragon to be. He had green eyes so clear and bright that they made you think of poisonous drinks or maybe mouthwash. On every finger of his hands, he wore a different, intricately shaped ring. Across his lap was a golden sword with an ornate crossguard. For a moment, she thought it was her own missing blade and took a half-step toward it before realizing that her sword had a plainer hilt. All his knights wore similar swords, forged from bright metal that gleamed like polished sunlight in their obsidian scabbards. Resting at the Alder King's feet was that pale and naked creature she had bargained with so long ago, the pale cat-like one with crimson-tipped skin. It regarded her lazily through half-lidded eyes. Then it waved a long-fingered hand, all claws. Her careful questions about memories and monsters flew from her head. She went down on one knee. As she did, she saw something shimmer among the intricate tiles of the floor, like a dropped coin catching the light.
Sir Hazel,
said the Alder King, leaning forward and peering down at her with those startling eyes. As handsome as any fairy tale prince, he was beautiful and awful all at once, despite the cruel twist of his mouth.
I do not remember commanding you to come here.
Hazel looked up at him, baffled. No, I...
In fact, I have explicitly told you never to come to a full moon revel. And last night, though you were most grievously needed to hunt with us, you ignored my summons. Have you forgotten our bargain so quickly? Defy me to your peril, Hazel Evans. Have I not given you the deepest, dearest wish of your heart, an unasked-for boon? Have I not made you one of my company? Know that I could take it from you just as easily. There are far more unpleasant ways to serve me.
I...
Hazel opened her mouth to speak, but no words came out. Suddenly the Alder King began to laugh.
Ah,
he said, looking not unlike the fairy woman upon realizing she'd mistaken Hazel for her mother.
You're not my Hazel, are you? Not my knight. You're the Hazel Evans who lives by day.
Chapter 14. Hazel thought that maybe she should stand, but she felt rooted in place. The party seemed to fade to a buzzing in her ears. Sir Hazel, the Alder King had called her. Jack's elf mother had asked Hazel an odd thing, too.
So have you come to pull him down off his white horse like in a ballad? Have you come to save him from us? Or is he here to save you?
She knew the ballad where someone got pulled down off a white horse. It was Tam Lin, where a human knight was forced into the service of a queen of faery and saved by a brave mortal girl, Janet. Tam Lin was a human knight. Hazel thought of the message in the walnut, 7 years to pay your debts, much too late for regrets. And there was the odd thing the knight had said to her when he'd brought her over, that they'd crossed swords before. Words deserted her.
How?
She forced out anyway.
You do not remember the bargain you made.
The Alder King leaned toward her, the horns on his circlet tipping forward. I promised you 7 years of my life. There's no way I could forget that. Hazel took a deep breath. She was getting her nerve back, pushing herself to her feet, heart pounding. She steeled herself for a battle of wits. Here, in some fashion, were the answers she needed. She just had to ask the right questions in the right way. But you're saying I've been paying my debt to you? I don't remember. I don't remember doing so. He smiled patiently.
Am I not generous to take those memories from you? Every night, from the moment you fall into slumber until your head touches your pillow again near dawn, you're mine. You are my knight to command, and your own daylight life is unaffected. You always had potential, and I have guided that potential. I have made you into one of my number.
Hazel was pretty sure that people who went without sleep for weeks died. Years was ridiculous. And it was equally incredible to think that she'd been trained by the knights here, under the hill, trained to be like them. She glanced to the three who stood to one side of the Alder King's throne, looking as though they'd stepped out of paintings from a time that never was. That doesn't seem possible.
And yet...
the Alder King said, gesturing to the air as though that was all the explanation needed. Magic as both question and answer.
We came to your window and carried you through the air to our court, evening after evening. You are the knight you always dreamed of being.
Breathe, Hazel told herself. Breathe. She remembered the tiredness that had come over her in Philadelphia, a lassitude that had never quite left her. Now at least she knew where it had come from, not puberty as her mother had believed. I never dreamed of being your knight.
Indeed,
drawled the Alder King, as though he knew the truth of her heart better than she ever could.
I forbade you from telling your day self about our arrangement, but there is no small pleasure in seeing you so astonished.
Hazel was speechless. She felt as though she didn't know herself, as if she'd betrayed her own ideals in some vast and profound way. But she wasn't yet sure how deep that betrayal went. She remembered her dream of riding beside other knights, of punishing humans with a grin on her face, and shuddered. Was that the person she'd become? He laughed.
"Well, Sir Hazel, if you haven't come here as my knight, why have you come?"
She had to think fast. She had to push away thoughts of her other, untrustworthy self. He must not know that she'd been the one to smash Severin's coffin. Since she'd been awake all the night before, following Ben through the woods, her other self wouldn't have shown up, couldn't have been interrogated, couldn't have revealed anything. And since the Alder King hadn't wanted her to know about her night self, he wasn't the mysterious Ainsel. Which meant her night self might have an ally in his court, someone whom she was working with. Hazel's gaze went to the creature lying at the Alder King's feet. This was the being to whom she'd rendered a promise, and while it had accepted her vow in the Alder King's name, maybe it had power over her still. "I came here because there's a monster in Fairfold. I wanted to know how to slay it." His smile was cold as his hand went to lift a silver-chased goblet and bring it to his mouth. A few of his courtiers laughed.
"Sorrow, she's called. A great and fearsome creature, her skin hardened to bark, tough enough to bend even fairy metal. You cannot slay her. And before you ask, the only antidote to the sleeping sickness she brings, to the moss that seeps into your veins at her touch, is her sap-like blood. So how about I make you another bargain, Hazel Evans?"
"What kind of bargain?" Hazel asked.
"The monster hunts for Severin. After all these long years, I discovered a means to control her. She obeys me now."
He raised his hand to show off a bone ring. He spoke on, not noticing her grimace.
"Bring me Severin, and I won't use her might against Fairfold. I will even keep my people in check. Things will return to the way they once were."
Hazel was so surprised, she laughed. "Bring you Severin?" He might as well have asked for her to bring him the moon and the stars. The Alder King didn't look particularly amused. He looked impatient.
"Yes, that's the order I intended to give my Hazel, but last night passed without her arrival. That's two nights you've cost me her service, counting this one. She is to hunt down the horned boy, my son, Severin, who's escaped his confinement. She is to kill anyone he is in league with, and drag him before me to face my wrath."
Bring him Severin, his son, her prince, a very real prince. Am I actually capable of doing that? Hazel wondered. She was a little worried she was going to laugh again. It all seemed so impossible. "Why me?" she managed.
"I think it would be appropriate if it was a mortal who defeated him,"
the Alder King said.
"Your better self would know not to trifle with me. But in case you have some romantic idea of warning my son, let me explain why you ought not do that. You think I have done your people such grievous wrongs, but allow me to demonstrate what I could do without any effort at all."
He turned to one of his knights.
"Bring me Lackthorn."
A few moments later, a fierce-looking goblin with grayish skin and pointed ears came before the Alder King, holding a dirty hat in his hands.
"What pleasures do I allow you in town, Lackthorn?"
The goblin shrugged. "Only a few. I steal the cream and break some dishes. When a woman threw dirty water on me, I drowned her. Nothing more than you said I might do." Hazel was astonished at the casualness with which he listed awful things, but no one else seemed surprised. The Alder King was looking down on him as though these were normal fairy caprices. Maybe to him they were. You didn't always let them go so far, though, did you?
I have allowed more leeway as I have come to see what a blight immortals are. But attend closely, Lackthorn. If I gave you leave to do what you'd like, what would you have done?
The Alder King cut a glance at Hazel.
What would I have done?
The little goblin laughed in such a gluttonous, awful way that the sound shivered up Hazel's spine.
I'd set fires and burn up the houses with them inside. I'd pinch and pinch them till they ached to their very bones. I'd curse them so they'd pine away. Then I'd gnaw on what was left. What would I do if you gave me leave? What wouldn't I do?
Did you know that the meat of the hazelnut was once thought to be the repository of all wisdom?
The Alder King said.
Be wise, Hazel. Lackthorn is one of the least dangerous of my troop. Imagine the answer the Bone Maiden might give. Or Rawhead. Or my splendid, monstrous Sorrow. Do not test my goodwill. Bring me Severin, or I will harrow Fairfold. I have plans afoot, and I would not like them to be interrupted. Sorrow hunts for him now, but I need her for other things.
Hazel felt as though she couldn't quite get her breath. Music still played in the background, people still whirled around, laughing and dancing, but it all went a little blurry and odd in her peripheral vision. She seemed to have been robbed of her power of speech. He'd made a threat so vast and terrible, she couldn't quite believe she'd heard it right. Hazel could tell from the Alder King's expression that he no more expected Hazel to speak than he expected a toad to turn into a toadstool, but she had to say something. Clearing her throat, she spoke. "If you set Sorrow on the town, I'll stop you." He had a cruel laugh.
You, like a wren stops a storm. Go now, Sir Hazel, and delight in the revel. Tomorrow is soon enough to begin your hunt. I will give you 2 days and 2 nights.
The knight with the screaming faces on his shoulder plates stepped to her elbow. A lutist began playing. Blackthorn made a bow and disappeared into the crowd. Hazel knew she was dismissed.
Oh,
the Alder King said, and she turned back to him.
One more thing. My son has a sword. A sword he stole from me. Bring it here, and I will forgive your 7-year debt. Now, aren't you pleased that I've given you this task?
How long have I served you? Hazel said. I made that vow when I was almost 11. I'm 16 now. That's 5 years, give or take.
But you've only served me half that time,
said the Alder King.
You owe me all your daylight hours yet.
Numbly, she began to move through the crowd. Finally, she found Jack standing near a table set with golden plates piled high with ripped-open pomegranates whose ruby beads clung to the fruit's wet, membranous skins, dusky plums, and grapes so purple they were black. These are his people. She'd known it intellectually, but really seeing? Really believing? Had taken until that moment. This was all familiar to Jack. This hidden, terrifying, beautiful, awful place. These terrifying, cruel people. But even knowing that, he was still the only familiar thing in a sea of strangeness.
What did he say?
Jack asked, looking puzzled but not displeased when she took his hand.
Did you find out anything?
Hazel shook her head. She didn't want to tell him then and there with all the eyes and ears around them. Anyway, she reminded herself, it was just one more secret, one more thing she couldn't say, just one more thing she was going to have to figure out how to fix. Step 1, figure out if her nighttime self was a villain. Step 2, find out who was leaving her notes. Figure out if it was the same person who'd gotten her to smash Severin's coffin. Figure out if that was the same person who had her sword. Step 3. Figure out whether Ansel was a friend or another enemy. Step 4. Figure out how she was supposed to bring Severin to the Alder King. It was enough to make her want to sit down on the ground and start to cry. It was too much. But there was no one else.